Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv Escana for the Law Offices of Rajiv Escana PC, immigration.com. Today is June 16th, 2011. This is a community conference call which is being recorded. So I ask you, if you do not wish for your voice to be recorded, don't speak up. Excuse me. And if you want to maintain your privacy, you just want to, when you speak with me, you can make up a name. This call will be publicly available. Other people will be listening into your story. So you may want to keep your identity confidential. Note that just by making this call or participating in this call, you have not retained us and we have not agreed to be your lawyers. This is merely for information. It does not establish an attorney-client relationship. Right now, everybody is on mute. I will go through the questions that have been posted, and then I will ask people for their input or further questions. I expect that we should be done about 35 minutes with all the question answers, and then we'll deal with any new issues or any follow-up questions and answers, okay? Here we go. First question is from Zijian, Noir I-140, NOIR I-140, okay. So his I-140 or her I-140 was approved in 2005. 485 was applied in 2007, used AC-21 and moved. Now, the previous employer has received an NOIR stating that the old employer has to establish employer-employee relationship. Well, you know, I have a very big problem with USCIS issuing notice of intent to revoke so many years after they have approved a case. One of these days, somebody should take them to court, and I think this will be a good case to follow through because this directly militates against the intention of AC-21 laws. So you have already responded, and you have not received response back, and the lawyer said that they have received the same RFE for some H-1Bs. Well, this type of RFE is not only for some H-1Bs. This is for every H-1B in which a client-site deployment is involved. So this is a very common thing. We deal with it all the time. And now the question is, how do you handle them? Well, you handle them by explaining the business model, by explaining who is in charge of your employment, by pointing out that your employer is in charge of your hiring, firing, demotion, promotion, benefits, you know, all the various incidents of employment. So far, we have never lost a case on the green card side on this issue. I think you'll be okay if the case was well prepared. If for some reason, heaven forbid, the case gets denied, feel free to contact us. We'll take it from there and see what we can do. But I'm hoping that if the case was responded to professionally and you know, thoroughly, you should be all right. Next question, why, where, says, I was on H-4. But the husband did not renew her H-4, and they have filed for a divorce. The case is pending. Now I become out of status. Ma'am, I am more concerned about unlawful presence than out of status, okay? If your I-94 has expired and you continue to stay in USA for 180 days, you cannot come back for 3 years. If you continue to stay for 1 year, you cannot come back for 10 years. This is a very serious issue, okay? Now, if you had contacted me, or even now, if the I-94 is still valid, go ahead and apply for a B visa, a tourist visa. The details on how to do that are in an article on my blog. If you go to my blog and look under employees' rights category, there is discussion on what to do if an H-1 employee gets laid off unexpectedly. I have advised them to file for a B visa. Now, the same standards apply to you as well. The reasoning is a little bit different, but you can apply for the B visa as long as you don't have the 310 bar problem already. If you are out of status or you're about to, let's say your I-94 is expiring in 1 month, I would suggest that you think of something else. It's not going to work for you to file for a B visa because it could take a few months for them to get back with you. And if for some reason you go over 180 days, then you have a 3-year bar. So that is the big issue here. Okay. let me get on to the next one. Student 12345 says, spouse and I both have an approved I-140. Okay. Both were unable to file 485. Presently, he is on H-1B status, and spouse is also on H-1B. Spouse is losing her job on 30th of August, but she's got a job in India, so she's moving back to India. I had initially requested an AOS adjustment of status and later filed 824 for consular processing, which was approved. So far, papers are not transferred to National Visa Center. Given my situation where priority dates are so close, and since my spouse would like to join her job in India, I ask for your suggestion. I think what you should do is, whenever your priority date becomes current, even though you have filed for the file to be transferred to consular processing, you can always change that. You can go ahead and convert back to adjustment of status, since you're still in USA, why not? That's one way to handle it. I prefer AOS for a bunch of reasons. And in your case, it makes sense because your file has gone into a deep hole where nobody knows what's going on. So just refile the adjustment of status. And she can go through following to join, or she can come into USA using H-4, file her 485 with you. She'll have to wait a few months before leaving. If she has an H-4 visa, she can apply for her advance parole and leave. And because she has an H-4 visa, she can be outside USA. But don't let that H-4 visa lapse, because that would lead to a lapse of her 485. Okay? So that would be my suggestion. That's the way to handle it. File for your AOS. Let her come on H-4 visa. Maintain your H-1. Maintain her H-4 until the 485 is actually approved. Okay. Your questions were, can she leave for India and later come back after getting her AP and EAD? She can only get her AP and EAD if she applies for 485. Two, can she come on a B-1 visa? When a green card is going on I-140, it'd be difficult to come on a B-1 visa, although there is no guarantee either way. It could work either way, but this is not a guaranteed scenario. H-4 is guaranteed, but B-1 is not. Can I bring her back to U.S. under my CP when it goes through? You can. That's called following to join. If you are doing CP, then she can come with you. You can do an interview at the same time. Can she file her own CP based on approved NIW? She can do that as well. I can't say pros and cons of each action. That would take too much time. But the bottom line is, it definitely is something that could work. Okay? But my own opinion is that doing an adjustment of status for you seems to make the most sense to me. Once again, guys, if you have trouble hearing me or anything, just send an email to help@immigration.com. Next question is from ZEAL2005, which is a fairly long discussion. Basically, what has happened is that this individual has joined another employer using AC21, and the job title for one is software engineer, the old job, and the job title for the new job is project manager. But the two job descriptions are absolutely the same. There is no difference. Okay. So, and then the new employer has given, look, I'll tell you something. I'm very uncomfortable when lawyers start suggesting to employers that change the job title on paper. There's no such thing. You have to go with whatever the truth is. Okay. The new employers have given a letter that says, he's also performing currently the role of a business analyst, etc. I think it's a little counterintuitive for somebody to say that this is totally a technical job when the title is project manager. Remember, the language of AC21 is same or similar jobs. Okay, so if the jobs are sufficiently similar, you should have been okay. Well, let's see what your questions are. Does it make sense to file AC21 now at this stage when PD has become current? Don't know. That's a tough one. I would probably file the AC-21. Do you think, based upon the above two letters, USCIS will have any concerns? I would really need to talk with you more in detail about this. You may want to arrange a consultation or talk with your own lawyer. You said you're not doing any project management activities as of now. I'm an independent contributor, and the role is 100% the same. I think that is something that can be brought out, and you can show sample work. After all, you are supposed to be doing analysis, coding, and design. You must have some sample work that you've done. You can show it to USCIS. Would USCIS know that I have changed my employer? That doesn't matter. You still have to come out and tell them if asked. Do they raise RFE for each candidate that did not file AC-21? Not necessarily. They can. RFEs are generated many times randomly, many times routinely. It depends. What would be the percentage of applicants that get RFE? I can't tell you that. Do you have any suggestions for me in this scenario? I think you should do an AC-21. Would I be able to represent you? Look, I am not a magician. I'm just a lawyer. I'm sure your lawyers, if they put in enough elbow grease in it, enough work in it, they can represent you just as well. But, of course, we are extremely conscientious and we do everything by the book. You want us to represent you, no problem at all. We'll be happy to do that. But it's a lot more expensive to go through us when you haven't worked with us from the very beginning. You might save money going with the same lawyers that you have now, but that's your choice, okay? Next question is Blue Sky Today, 485 to F1. Hi, Rajiv. I was on H-1B. Then I had filed 485. In 2009, I was admitted to a full-time grad program. And then you gave me advice to go to Ottawa. That worked out. Okay, here is the weird thing. When you have an F-1 and a 485 together, USCIS has said they both cannot coexist. Essentially, what they mean is that your F-1 no longer exists if you have a 485 going. So who knows what they have done? Look, if the job is still open, okay, and you are willing to take that job, I don't see any reason why you cannot get your green card. Okay? So, again, talk with your lawyers. Discuss your situation with them. In my view, it should be possible to get your green card under the circumstances. You've gotten this person. Next person is Bichkhand, who says he's on a J-1 with a federal agency. Filed I-140. So now the question is, with the I-140 pending, can I get a J-1 visa? It can be problematic, sir, really problematic. So if you can avoid going to India, that would be much better for you. If you do go, I don't know what your chances of coming back are. You've got to get your waiver done. You've got to file your 485. Please don't travel to India. I think it'll be a bad idea. Next question, I be the one. I'm an F1, wants to work on CPT, but the college is saying you've got to do 3 extra credits and they want to charge $4,000 for it. That sounds terrible. That sounds like something that a school is doing just to fleece money from you. Do you know any law under which my college can force me? Well, the thing is, CPT is left to an extent to the discretion of the school, to the DSO. What you can do is you can complain to ICE as well as to, what is that organization that manages your I-20s? Don, I forgot the name. It skipped my memory. The organization or the database, let me do a Google on that. F1 database. Let me see if that works. Or I-20 database. No. I-20. Some days my memory doesn't work that well. I-20 database. That does not say anything. Okay. I-20. It's where they enter your information. You know, when you get an I-20, your information is entered into a database. The agency that's responsible for that database, they are the ones who also manage the student visa program. So you can talk with them. And ICE, of course. I think, Savis, thank you, Rao. Rao just sent an email to me saying it's Savis. Thank you very much. It's Savis, but the agency is called something different. The agency that manages Savis, if you just Google Savis, actually, let me just see. S-E-V-I-S, if you just Google, the agency is called SEVP. So I just Googled Savis, and the first entry was International Student Exchange and Visitor Program, SEVP. They are a sub-agency of ICE. So if you just type www.ice.gov/Savis, that brings you to that page. And you can definitely contact them and, raise an objection against the school trying to fleece you. Rao, thank you for your email. Coming back to what I was talking about, so you've got your information, and you can let them know that you intend to complain to Savis and SEVP. Feel free to use my name, that this is what was discussed, and I believe that the government should take a look at this policy that they have. It looks to me very hinky that a school would want to charge $4,000 just to give you a CPT. Most important thing is that this is not related to your course of study. Why would they want you to take this? CPT is given because you are doing something related to your course of study. Why would they want you to take credits not in your course of study? That sounds really awful, actually. Next question is CCRC. H-4 visa has an expiration date of August 10, 2012. But when they went to India last time, you're already 75 days out of status. Well, you're also unlawfully present. So if you're unlawfully present for 180 days, you would have serious issues. You've talked to your husband's company's lawyers. They recommended to file an I-94 extension. Not at all. Not at all. You see, the problem is you cannot file H-4 premium processing. If your husband is doing H-1 premium processing, you can file with him. But I think a much better plan might be, again, I don't know the details more than what you've told me, of your personal as well as husband's personal professional situation. The better plan may be to visit India or wherever your home country is and to wait out until his H-1 is approved and come back with a new H-4 approval. Okay? So, number one, is it possible to ask for an I-94 extension when you have already the expiration date the same day that your valid H-1B visa? The question is difficult to answer. Theoretically, it is possible to apply for an I-94 extension when I don't know what this question is. Actually, I'm a little confused with this question. Maybe you're on the phone. You can explain it further. Next question is, my H-4 visa is already voided due to the overstay. Well, let me see. When does your visa expire? Give me one second. Oh, I see. Visa is expiring in August 2012. You could try doing this. I mean, although technically being out of status voids that visa, but it has to be voided by somebody. It's not by operation of law. I used to think, and I at least used to, preach that. But now I'm of the opinion until CBP steps in and says this visa is void, you could just go outside USA and come back showing your husband's H-1 approval up to 2012, as well as your visa stamping, and they should be able to extend your I-94 to 2012. That's my feeling. And if for some reason they refuse you entry, then you would, of course, have to go to India from there and wait out there until his H-1 is approved. Trying to do an H-4 within USA is a risky policy or a risky step. Should I wait for the I-94 extension? Should I go out of USA right away? I think personally that you should just go and re-enter USA. Just go to fly to Canada and come back, surrender your I-94 and come back, ask for a new I-94. I-485 question from Immigration 1975. Working on H-1B, approved I-140. I am principal applicant. Priority date is to be current soon. Spouses on H-1B. She was out of status for some time. Well, some time is important. If she was out of status for less than 180 days, she is then protected by something in law called Section 245K as in kite. That section protects people who apply through employment-based application and their beneficiaries from being out of status for up to 180 days. If you want to correct it, it's more than 180 days, have her step outside USA and come back and then apply for 485. that will be like taking a river in the taking a dip in the holy river Ganges. It washes away all your sins. Okay, so if you step outside USA and come back for 245K purposes, your slate is wiped clean and you can file adjustment of status. It's no problem. Okay. Is W-2 required? It can be asked for just to make sure she's been maintaining status. So yes, it can be asked for. Bob Basic 2002 wants to know, Bobby says, I ported GC from EB3 to EB2. He's got his green card. Well, congratulations. What happens when the priority date becomes current about the EB3 application? Well, they're just basically going to, you know, close those cases. You already have your green card. Sassi wants to know, they want to incorporate a nonprofit company on H-1B status. Sassi, what I want you to do is, everybody who's involved with a nonprofit, go ahead and send me an email to help@immigration.com. I'll do a conference call for you guys separately. And I will tell you what I think you can and cannot do. So let's do that separately. I need to know a lot more about the company. Theoretically, at least, this should be possible. But I need to know what you guys do and how far away is this activity from what you do. I need to know what the claimed activity is. I need to know what your role will be. Personally, I feel that anybody who volunteers should not be having any problems. But if there's any benefit associated with that, then that can be considered to be employment. Okay? Talk with me. Send me an email to help@immigration.com. I'll set up a conference for you. Of course, we won't charge you for that. I just want to understand a little bit more about what you guys are planning to do, and then we'll take it from there. If you're on the phone right now, maybe you can give me the details. If we have time today, then we can talk and decide right now. Okay, VP99 says, I'm a physical therapist under Schedule A. Well, Schedule A is still available. It's not that Schedule A is not available. Since 2006, I've been divorced and remarried, added my husband to my existing application. His I-140 was approved. We both currently have an EAD. My husband has had his biometrics and medical. My application is lost somewhere. Okay, I see. What happened was the old husband also had filed a 485. The new husband also has filed a 485 for her. The old 485 was withdrawn. Her own 485 is somewhere lost. So what do I do? That's the question. What if I were you, I would go to the local congressman's office. And if you want to know how to contact your congressman, go to immigration.com and type congressman, one word, congressman. And there should be an article that pulls up second or third or fourth article from the top that tells you how to contact your congressman's office. Let them step in, and they can... they should be able to, you know, track down your application and make sure it gets taken care of. Okay? Next question is SANVUD. Question is about the reentry permit. Green card is 2 years old. Wants to be with a family for 6 months. It could go on for 1 year. Do you advise I apply for reentry permit? Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you should apply for a reentry permit. Remember, it's not a guarantee of maintaining your green card, but this is the best thing you can do. A reentry permit is simply a declaration by an individual that I do not intend to surrender my green card. Okay? So most of the cases, that's a good protection. After I get the reentry permit and do not go for some reason, is there an impact on green card? No, not at all. Yeah, but you should cancel the reentry at that time. I guess I need to file two separate for me and my wife. Yes. Should I wait until I receive the reentry permit before I leave for India? That's not required. The way it works is you apply for reentry. A few months later, 2, 3, 4 months later, you get a call for your biometrics. You do the biometrics, and then you can leave. And the reentry permit can be sent to the U.S. consulate where you want, or it can be sent to a local address here in USA. Okay? Next question is from Fernando. Fernando is currently working on a TN2 visa. I'm not sure what TN2 is. TN is Treaty National, so either you're a Canadian or a Mexican. So you are trying to convert to an H-1B and you have a bunch of questions. Get yourself a lawyer, Fernando. This is not a simple issue. I can write a book on how to get an H-1B and what the problems associated with it are. please don't try to do it yourself. The questions that you have asked me, I cannot answer because they become almost like a set of questions that would be considered to be legal malpractice. It's like a doctor assisting a patient over the telephone on how to do surgery on somebody else. I mean, that's so wrong. So, no, I decline to answer your questions. Let me see what I can answer. But definitely you need to get yourself a lawyer. Don't do it yourself. My first step is to take a 9035. I'm not going to talk about that. My current policy position is management consultant. New position will be computer support staff. Specialist can become a problem. You need to have a bachelor's degree in a discipline that and the job must require that bachelor's degree. Does my company need to advertise? No. Not if they are not H-1B dependent. I've noticed that 9035 form requires a period of intended employment. Will these dates have a direct application on my H-1B visa? Sir, I respectfully cannot answer any of these questions because you need to get yourself a lawyer. This is not something you should be doing yourself. Next question is Hector. He's got an H-1B since 2003. He got two extensions based upon the labor certification pending. Then the labor cert was denied. You know, if you file an appeal against the denial, you can still keep getting H-1 extensions. I don't know if you filed an appeal or not. Last November, I traveled to Venezuela, and then you got held up there. Now you've come back and you applied for asylum. The problem is I don't know anything about asylum, Hector. You need to talk to your own lawyers. I don't know exactly what your situation is. So I really cannot talk about what your rights and liabilities and how they interact with an H-1B are. You need to talk with your own lawyers. Next question is Shiva GP, who wants to know about expired I-94. I-94 had expired. This attorney said it's not a problem. I think it is a problem. You have a valid I-94 on I-797. So basically you have two I-797s. One you have from way back, and the other one came with an H-1 approval. I'm assuming that's the situation. If that is the situation, that you have an old I-94 which expired, but a new one attached to a new I-797, which is an H-1 approval notice, then your lawyers are right. Okay? And if that is not expired, then as long as it is, it's for that employer for whom you are working. Okay? Went to Tijuana, Mexico, got visa stamped with present employer. They canceled previous employers. While returning, they didn't give me the new I-94. This is a dangerous situation because what has happened is that you have an I-94 that was given for a duration shorter than the approval notice gave you. The new approval notice gave you a longer duration. But after you got the longer duration, you traveled outside and came back, another I-94 was issued. Now, let me tell you something. This is a very dangerous situation. Make sure that your lawyers research this issue thoroughly, because if they don't, you could be subject to 3-year or 10-year bar. As far as I remember, USCIS had said at a certain point of time that they will accept the second I-94. Okay? In other words, the one that was attached to the 797. I am just concerned it needs to be researched. You need to see something in writing from USCIS that says so. Okay? I don't like the idea that, service in their discretion allows untimely filing of a petition. I think you've got a problem. I'm concerned about this. I think you could be looking at 310 bar problem. I don't have enough facts, unfortunately. If you are on the phone, we can talk a little bit more, but I think there's an issue here. I would not take it that lightly. Of course, USCIS can forgive it, but why would they? Is there a reason, good enough reason for them to forgive it? Last question for today. Jaiho wants to say H-1B extension stamping denied, 221G possible visa revocation and next steps. Well, what happened was he went to India, applied, and his H-1 visa was denied. Now he is transferring to another company The questions are, can the previous denial hurt me? The answer is no, because it appears to be connected only to your old employer. When can I start my GC perm process? You can start your process anytime you want. Can my GC process with previous company continue? Yes, it can, as long as you make it back to USA and you intend to join them and they have a job offer open for you, the same job offer that is under the green card. So you can have more than one green card going at the same time. You can also transfer the priority date of the old I-140 to the new one if the old company does not go out of business or does not withdraw your I-140. That's pretty much the answers I have today, questions I have today. Now, I want to deal with those people first who have posted questions and who have follow-up questions. If you guys have any follow-up questions, please press 5-star on your phone. 5-star. Press 5-star. Okay, I see 2 questions. 1, 2, 3, 4 questions. 5. Okay, all right. Let me get started in the order people logged in. Area code 770, go ahead.
Okay, this is Claudia Ramirez. As I wrote like CCRC about the H-4 visa with the I-94 expiration, which
right.
is already expired.
Right.
Yeah, and I have a question. I heard about your suggestion that go outside from United States.
Yeah, go to your home country. Claudia, from what I remember, you were 75 or 85 days out of status already, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And
Let me get some timeline straight. Your husband's
yep.
current H-1, when does that expire?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Your husband's current
mm-hmm.
H-1, when does it
yep.
expire?
It expired in August 10, 2012.
Up to 2012, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a visa stamp on your passport, which is still good till 2012, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I feel that going out and coming back using that visa will get you your I-94.
Okay.
Okay. Now, is it the most appropriate way? I think it's good enough. It may not be the most appropriate way because it can be said, being out of status, your visa is canceled. But, you know, until somebody actually cancels it, how are you supposed to know it is canceled? Okay.
Oh, okay.
My feeling is just stepping outside USA and coming back using that same old visa should be good enough.
Okay. And the attorneys from my husband's company are suggesting to fill an extension. I'm not so sure of the terms.
I am very concerned about that because the extension could easily take more than 4 or 5 months because there is no premium processing of H-4, you know. You can do H-1 premium processing, and if you file H-1, H-4 together, you can do both premium processing, but you cannot do H-4 premium processing by itself.
Yeah, actually they are doing both. And I'm not sure what are they extending because he already has his I-94 is going to expire the same day that his visa.
Well, they could always do an amendment. You know, for example, if
okay.
his job is changed or if they do any kind of amendment, they can do that premium processing and they can add you to it.
Okay, and the last concern that I have is if we go to that option and it fails,
just keep an eye out on the 180 days. As long as you don't go over 180 days, you should be okay.
Okay.
Now, technically, you're deportable, but nobody's going to come looking for you. That's very unlikely. This is not something that you've done on purpose. So
mm-hmm.
I personally feel that you should be okay, even by filing an extension, as long as you keep an eye out on the 180-day deadline. But I think the best thing to do is just, where are you from? Which country are you from?
From Mexico.
And just take a trip to Mexico and come back after a few days.
Okay. And if the attorneys start the process, can I anyway go?
You can still go, yes, yes. That process is gone. If you leave, the process is gone, but that's okay.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much for your help.
You're welcome. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, I am going to area code 603. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mr. Khanna, the first question was mine about the NOIR and the I-140.
Yeah, I think it sucks the way they work. It's so awful.
Well, you know, to complicate you know, matters further, we just applied for a new perm and got it approved, and we're going to port this date, you know, the 2005 date. So, you know, the NOIRs come at exactly the same time.
Actually, you know, that's okay. You should immediately file for the I-140 premium processing. Here is the way I would handle it. If for some reason the I-140 gets revoked, I don't think there's an appeal against it. But a motion to reopen can be filed. In the meantime, when was your current perm filed?
The current one was filed about a week ago.
The perm?
The new perm, I'm talking about the porting one. The old perm was filed in...
No, you got the perm approval already in 1 week?
Oh, no. They've just filed the perm and they were telling us, you know, that they were planning to...
don't have the approval yet?
No, sorry. There is no approval as yet.
Okay, well, I don't know what to tell you because it depends upon how they have handled. If there is appeal against it, I don't know what kind of grounds it's based upon. But if there is an appeal, as long as the appeal is pending, you can still keep getting H-1 extensions.
Okay.
If there is no appeal, then you are in trouble.
Okay.
So then I think you might have to take them to court.
Okay. Well, that sounds scary, you know.
No, it's not scary. It's something that needs to be done. And, you know, somebody should have done that a while ago. It's just the way they are doing these things is awful.
Yeah, I mean, and it's been like 45 days now and we haven't heard anything back from them. So the thing is, in case we don't hear from them, you know, even after 60 days, and then what do we do? I mean, do we have to call them?
Well, I don't think that's going to do much, but yeah, no harm in calling them.
But then we can, I mean, if things go, I mean, if we get a perm approval and all that, can we just go forward and ask them?
Well, what you do is, if you get the perm approval, then you do an I-140 premium processing. Then based upon the I-140, you can get 3 H-1 extensions anyway.
Okay.
But if you have to, if there's any gap, you might have to leave for a couple of weeks. You're back again in 3 years, for 3 years.
Okay. Thank you so
Good
much,
luck.
Mr. Khanna.
All right.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Oh, by the way, I also want to add that whatever H-1 duration they have already given you, they won't take that away.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. I'm opening area code 248. Go ahead, please. Area code 248.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Shiva GP. Question number 17.
Yes, Shiva, what is the question?
This is about my expired I-94 1.5 years ago.
Ooh, 1.5 years ago. Okay. Yeah, remind me, what is the story?
The story is, first I was with the X company. Then, you know, after that, you know, I changed my company. Then I got my new approval notice along with the I-97.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the, like May 2009, I left to India showing my...
Yeah, I remember now. So the way it is that you have two employers in the picture, A and B. A was the old employer, and B is the new employer. When you moved from A to B, you got a new I-797 with a new I-94, correct?
That is correct.
That I-797 is still valid. The I-94 is still valid, correct?
Yes, the new one, right.
Then after you got the approval, you traveled out, but when you came back, they gave you a duration shorter than the one that you have for your 797. Is that correct?
No, Raju. Thing is, I went to India, then I came back on my old I-94, my old employer.
After that,
I went to Mexico to get a stamp with my new employer.
Okay.
Then, while returning to the U.S., they didn't give me the new I-94 based on my new U.S. visa stamp with a new employer.
Yeah,
still,
I understood.
They asked me
no,
to
I understood.
Keep
it's basically, the problem in these cases is that I think they will accept the 797 I-94 as the good I-94, but I would still want to see something in writing.
Okay.
I won't trust that provision of law that talks about discretion of USCIS. Who knows what they are going to do with their discretion?
Right.
Okay. But in any case, at this point, what else can you do? I mean, you if the I-94 expired more than a year ago, you can't travel outside USA anyway.
Right.
Okay. So really, your only hope is to leave yourself at the mercy of your lawyers and hope for the best.
Okay. Okay.
I don't want to scare you. I think you're going to be fine. But if you had called me before that year and a half ago, I would have said, don't do this. Make sure you have something in writing. I think you're going to be fine. I do remember having this issue before and being able to deal with it quite okay. If there's a problem, call me. Otherwise, I think you're going to be fine.
And Rajiv, one more thing. This situation is, you know, we came to know about this query yesterday. You know,
right.
Week ago we requested for 7th year H-1B extension as a premium processing.
Right.
And my visa and my new I-94, which is attached to the current I-797, which is going to be expiring in this month, 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
And they are requesting the, you know, RFE documents by end of July 10th.
Yeah, I think you should be okay. Go ahead and submit your I-94 that came with the 797.
But the query, what they're asking is, you know, I suppose that I am legally staying in U.S. when I applied for H-1B extension. So
you were, right? You were at that time legal.
Yes, based on my attached I-797, I-94.
Are there three employers involved here or two?
No, two.
Two employers, right? First employer, you were still working with them when you applied for a changeover. Right?
Right.
You were still working with employer A when you applied for a change to employer B.
Right.
Okay. While this case was pending, you traveled, or after the case was approved, you traveled?
No, after I received my approval notice and everything, then I traveled.
You traveled. But while coming back, instead of showing the new approval, you showed them the old approval.
That is correct.
Why?
Means I didn't show my approval notice at all because I didn't get a new visa stamp.
So they just used the visa to give you the I-94?
Right.
The visa that was already on your passport?
It was already on my passport. Based on that, they gave me the new I-94.
Okay. Okay. Then when you went to Canada, or went to Mexico to get your visa stamp, they didn't give you a new I-94.
Yeah, actually, I went to Mexico by walk.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, so the answer to your question is what I just told you. It looks to me like you were maintaining status when you applied for transfer because you were still working for employer A.
Right.
And your I-94 of employer A was still valid.
That time, yeah, when I applied for employer Employer
yeah,
B.
Yeah, I think you're fine.
But right now, my old employer, I-797, already expired, which is on
that
December
2009. On the date you applied for the transfer, you must have a valid I-94 through that employer.
That is correct.
I think you'll be okay.
Okay. And Raju,
yeah.
Personally, can you please handle this call? You know, if I want to later, you know, I can give it all.
Look, I don't want you to get concerned. I want you to be aware and alert. But don't get concerned. Don't lose sleep. I think you're going to be fine. If there is a problem, I'm always here. You call me if there's any issues. We've handled
okay.
very, very difficult cases. And by God's grace, we have been very successful in handling most of them. This is not your fault. This is not something you do. The system just is very messed up. You know, they should have looked at the I-94. They should have issued you the proper I-94. There's a lot of things that have gone wrong. But overall, because USCIS also knows that there are problems with the system, they will probably accept the I-94 and not create a problem.
And they don't show up any issues for my extension, right?
I don't think so. Well, the other issues, not the status issue. I think status issue will be fine, but there may be other issues.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah,
yeah, I got
so
you.
Don't worry. You don't have to call me right now. I'm not going to add anything over and above what I just told you. There's no need to pay a consultation to talk with me separately. If there is a problem, then you call me, and if if it's necessary, I'll take over the case.
And Raju, is there any suggestion where I can, you know, say to my attorney while providing the, you know, documents like this kind of?
It's very difficult for you to do that. You cannot really find that information yourself. Your lawyers might be able to.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Is there any direct number, Raju, you know, in case if I want you to talk?
Just email me help@immigration.com.
Okay, then, Raju. Yeah.
All right. Good luck. And like I said, don't worry. If there was something to worry, I would have told you right now, start worrying. You've got a problem. I think you're going to be okay.
Thank you so much, Raju.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, guys. Oh, this is from where my sister lives. 818, area code. Sorry. Okay. 818. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Rajiv, this is Dhil 2005, and this
yes,
is a
sir.
Question about that software engineer and project manager position.
Uh-huh, I remember your question, sure.
Yeah, so Rajiv, basically what I'm trying to understand is they give importance to the designation or they...
Look, they look at everything, but on the scale of things that are most important, I think job description is the most important.
Oh, okay, so job description here is matching, right?
Yeah, job description is 100% the same, not matching. It's the same.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think that if you do end up doing an AC21, you know, I personally think you should. And I personally think that your lawyer should spend a little time on it and make sure that they're filing the right kind of papers with the government so the government understands. You've got to tell the truth. You can't just make up things. But you've got to present the information in the format that helps your case. I mean, of course, the government wants to know exactly how the two jobs are similar. If I were you, a lawyer, I would submit some sample work that I've done. Look, this is the code I, you know, this is the code I wrote. This is the system I designed. Every element of the job can be demonstrated by through experience, through samples. Or at least I'll have it ready, and I'll say, you know, if you need samples, we can give you samples. This is exactly what he does.
Oh, okay. And, no, my lawyer has suggested me to wait and just watch now if we get the RFE because the date is already current.
I don't think that's a bad strategy. I just prefer to keep everything clean. I can completely understand why your lawyer is saying that, you know, keep this, let's just sit tight and not file an AC-21. I think that's okay, too. I prefer to file the AC-21 now rather than not to file. That's just a personal preference. What your lawyer is saying is not wrong.
Oh, okay, I see.
You know, let me tell you why I think so. It just, to me, it's, you know, again, I could be wrong about this. To me, it appears if you voluntarily provide the information, it looks a little better than if you provide it in response to an RFE. Okay?
Well, yeah.
There's a little psychological thing here. But the negative side of what I'm thinking is you are inviting trouble without – there may not be any trouble. They might just approve the green card. Why am I inviting trouble for my client? So it's a delicate balance. I'm not sure which way to go. I personally prefer to go filing the AC-21 way.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that was the reason I was asking, like, how many cases normally they, you know, raise the RFE.
I don't think I can give you any of those statistics. Many times when you file an AC-21, they also schedule you for an interview locally. That means another 6-8 months, 1 year gone. But, you know, all things considered, this is the way I handle it. I cannot say, you know, how other lawyers handle it, but this is the way I handle it.
Yeah, okay, I understand.
Okay, good
okay.
luck. All right.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, somebody from my neighborhood, area code 202. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Sasi.
Sasi. I have two more calls. Let me put you on hold for a second, okay? I'll come
no
back
problem.
To you.
No problem.
Because it might take a little bit more time. Just one
sure.
second. Area code 646. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. It's Jai Ho, basically there.
Jai Ho, bhai.
From H-1B visa extension, stamping denied 221G.
Yes, you're coming through another employer. You'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm trying through that. As I said in my question one, are there any chances of denial again based on...
Oh, there are always chances of denial, but not based upon the earlier denial. That doesn't matter.
Another question popped in my mind is, in DS-160 form, I filled my visa has been revoked, but the only information I have provided by U.S.
Your visa was not revoked, it was denied.
But the letter said that it's possibly going to be revoked. So
no, the petition will be revoked, but the visa was denied.
Okay, so in DS-160, do I need to fill it's revoked and denied both?
No.
Or?
If the question says, has your H-1 petition or has your petition ever been revoked, you would probably say yes. But here, only thing you really need to say is, has your visa ever been denied? Yes. Which visa? H-1 visa.
Okay, because I've said yes to both.
That's okay.
Anyway,
that's okay. Not a big deal.
I've been hearing a lot of stories about, you know, bringing the
visa stamps.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what they're doing is completely illegal. What the consulate is doing is completely illegal, but unless somebody takes them to court, they're going to keep doing it.
I think I would definitely one day, if it doesn't get approved this time, because it's been a few months, I've been paying all my expenses without salary in the U.S.
Well, there you go. Actually, I have filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the consulates as well as the USCIS. I want to know in the last 5 years how many H-1s have they denied and how many have they approved. So once I get the results from that Freedom of Information Act request, we'll deal with it.
Sure. I think that's it. Thank you very much, Roger.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
Area code 917. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Rajiv ji. This is Bobby.
Yes, Bobby. What's up?
I had that EB3 question. Though, what happens to the EB3 application, the old one?
Yeah. Nothing. It just gets thrown away. Don't worry about it.
Oh, so it goes in the kachara. Okay. Also,
yep,
I was planning on going to India now, so all I need is the card or any stamping or anything also?
Just the green card. Just the green card and your passport. Those are the only two things you need.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, guys, I only have 8 more minutes, so let me see. Sasi has a few questions, so I don't know if I can take any new questions, but let me see. Sasi?
Hello, Rajiv. Thank you very much.
So talk to me about what this organization will do.
Yeah, this is an organization we are floating, we are a bunch of professionals working in the same field. We work in the financial inclusion sector. So
CDCD Jawan mein baat karo, ye financial inclusion sector, what does that mean?
That is basically to, you know, it's an international development sector. It's about non-profit sector, but where we bring people together in the DC area, talk about issues about financial access and stuff like that, banking, you know, people are not having.
But you intend to make no money out of it.
No, this is not a money-making institution. This is just to, you know, create a platform for people to discuss.
As long as you don't get any benefits out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, as long as you're not getting even a single dollar in cash or kind,
right.
I don't think there's a problem.
We can sign the documents in the incorporation.
I don't see why not. Just make sure that the tax laws don't require that people who are floating 501c3 corporations require to be citizens or green card holders.
And so that means that as a H-1B holder, I basically don't have to really worry in that sense that I don't see any problem.
As long as you are working for the advancement of your profession without getting paid for it in cash or kind, I don't see any problem with it.
Okay, so even if I sign a document or if I am on a board of an organization but not getting
any
paid.
No problem.
Okay, but you mentioned that just make sure that the law doesn't require U.S. citizens.
That's tax law.
Okay.
You know, for example, I'll give you an example. If you want to float a Chapter S corporation, you cannot. Mm-hmm. You have to be a citizen or an immigrant.
Okay.
So make sure that there's no such law for 501c3 corporations. I don't think there is, but just double check.
So a tax lawyer will be able to tell us about
that. A tax lawyer can tell you that, yes.
Okay. But in general, if it's not a paid occupation, I don't have to really worry about...
Cash or kind?
Yeah, cash or kind, yes.
Okay.
Nothing on paper, yeah.
Yep. Good luck, Sasi.
Great. Thank you very much, Raj. You really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, guys, I have 2 more questions. Since we started talking, I'll answer these 2 and then we are done for the day. And I'll see you in 2 weeks, okay? Area code 240, go ahead, please. Area code 240.
Hi, Rajiv. Yeah. I sent an email just now that my wife was on, H-1 for a few months.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, and she received only payslip for the December in 2008. And later on, her H-1 was migrated to, transferred as changed to H-4 Okay, H1 to H4 like in 2009.
So while she was on H1, she didn't work?
She worked for like only 1 month, and later on she didn't find any project, and they changed the from H1 to H4 in the
okay.
online. So like
all right, so you converted from H1 to H4.
Right, yes.
Okay, I mean, then what happened?
I mean, like, now, like, my dates are getting closer to 485.
Okay.
I mean, so that's the reason, like, will this be, like, out of status thing it will become or what? So.
Yeah, she was out of status during the time she didn't work. I personally would want her to just travel outside and come back.
No, she already did. She did, and she got...
When did she enter USA?
Pardon?
When did she enter USA?
She entered USA like last year only. I mean, 2010.
She entered USA last year. Okay. And the H1 employment was before last year.
Right. It was in like 2008.
Then there is no problem.
Okay. She already has like...
then there is no problem. You're fine.
Okay. And one more thing is like in EB2's category... They applied, my petition is approved around, like, for 80K. And now, because of some break in the project, like, currently they are paying me, like, 60K. Will this be an issue?
Is your I-140 already approved?
Yes.
Well, normally this issue does not come up after the I-140 approval, but if it does, then you can have a problem. But normally this issue does not come up.
Okay. So, like,
okay.
Yeah, can I ask them to pay now, like, higher salary so that, like, we can compensate that?
Don't know the answer to that question, but you can certainly try, because the fact that they have not paid so far creates some doubts about their ability to pay, and the government can make an issue of that.
Okay.
Right. Okay?
Okay. So once 140 is approved, like, my salary has to be the... one that has been, like, stated.
Well, it doesn't have to be. The salary only has to match H-1 wages. Green card salary is for the future. Are your H-1 wages also 80,000?
It is 70, but right now it is, like, 60K. Like,
yeah, they can't do that. They are in violation of H-1 laws.
Okay. Right.
And it puts into doubt whether they can afford to pay the green card salary.
Okay. So as long as they maintain that H-1 wages, then...
Yeah, then we are okay, because the green card salary is a future salary.
Okay? All right. Okay, then.
Good luck.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. Last question for the day. I'm answering area code 443. Go ahead, please, 443.
Hello, Rajivji. This is Sam. I'm calling from Maryland. I would like to know about any updates on Tri-Valley University, because nowadays...
Nothing major as a as an organization. I haven't seen anything. Same old garbage going on. Some people get approved. Some people get denied. Some reinstatements have been approved. But, you know, nothing special. Whatever you hear on the Google groups, that's pretty much all that's going on.
Okay, and actually I was following your calls from the beginning today. My I-94 says, I changed my status from H-1B to F-1. My I-94 says duration of status. It doesn't...
Hang on, guys.
I mean,
I know you have questions, but I'm not going to have time today. Other people are also raising hands. I really am not going to have time. I have to leave for a conference in like 5 minutes. So this is the last call I can do. Let's congregate again in 2 weeks. If it's very urgent, then, you know, send me an email. But if it's not urgent, please wait. Okay, go ahead, sir. Sam, keep going.
My 94 says duration of status, and I applied change of status to F2, and also I applied for H1B. It's been almost 6 months. If both denied, they're going to...
See, when it says DS, you don't have unlawful presence issues.
Okay.
Okay, the only time unlawful presence begins is if USCIS says in a petition that you're out of status, or if the immigration court says you're out of status.
Okay, so they're not going to directly
yeah, that's
that
not going to happen.
Bar.
So you're not subject to the 310 bar as long as you have the DS.
Okay, thank you, sir. That was my question. Thank you very much.
All right, Sam. Well, good luck to everyone, guys. Thanks for being here, and I appreciate your being here. See you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.